Okay, I want to welcome you all this morning to Garden Grown Kids. My name is Shantae Fisher. I recognize a lot of you out here, so thank you so much for coming. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us to this place, for the privilege that we have to come together in fellowship, to learn. Lord, you know that for those of us who've been blessed with children, it is our deepest heart's desire to prepare them for the kingdom of heaven. We need your wisdom. I pray that you will send your Holy Spirit and direct my words as I share from my experience, and may we receive a blessing as we are together in this place. In your name I pray, amen. So I gave a class very similar to this 2 years ago here, and if you were in that class, you might hear some repeat. But I have maybe 2 more years of experience since then, so I'm going to be sharing some new things with you as well. But first of all, I want to share that a couple years ago, I had the opportunity to take a photography class, which was something I had wanted to do for a long time. And when I first got to the class, you know, I had been really looking forward to learning how to use this camera of mine, and especially learning how to edit photos. And it was a little bit inconvenient to me that the teacher of the class seemed to have the burden to just teach us how to see. That's what he said. He said, "You're here because I want to change the way you see." I was like, okay, that sounds great, but what about, you know, my ISO and this and that and the other? Well, as I sat through the classes over the next few weeks, and he taught us how to look at the world, how to look at God's creation, how to notice, how to freeze frame moments, how to notice those little details that had passed me by before, the class was actually a life-changing experience for me as I learned to see and value the joy, the wonder, the beauty in those everyday moments. And, you know, there's many, many times that I don't have a camera, but there are so many things that I can value, that I can remember because I've taken the time to notice them. It's given me a new vision of how I look at the world. Well, God has been working in my life to give me that same vision for motherhood and parenthood, and recognize the joy and the wonder and the beauty in the environment of the garden and the forest and the home. I want to share with you one of my favorite quotes from Ministry of Healing. If you have not recently read the parenting, home, children sections of Ministry of Healing, you should go and do it. It is excellent, and I go back regularly to read and be re-inspired again. But this is from Ministry of Healing, page 377, and it says, "There is a God above, and the light and glory from his throne rests upon the faithful mother as she tries to educate her children to resist the influence of evil. No other work can equal hers in importance. She has not, like the artist, to paint a form of beauty upon canvas, nor like the sculptor to chisel it from marble. She has not, like the author, to embody a noble thought in words of power, nor like the musician to express a beautiful sentiment in melody. It is hers, with the help of God, to develop in a human soul the likeness of the divine." Wow, what a privilege is ours as mothers, is ours as parents, to develop in these human souls the likeness of the divine. So I want to back up and share. 2 years ago, last time I shared here, we had been gardening full-time. From the time I married my husband, we were in partnership with each other, in business, we worked together, really enjoyed that. If you've had an opportunity to work together with your spouse in ministry or in business, it can really be very, very enjoyable. And Luke and I just loved working together, made a good team, our strengths were good for each other. And as children started to come along, I remember we had our first two. We had a backpack for each one of them, put them on the back, and just brought them right along, gave them their naps in the garden, and they really didn't slow us down very much. And then number three and number four came along, and we had a conversation. We were like, how are we going to do this? And we decided we wanted to co-parent and co-work so that I could continue to work with Luke and that we would both parent our children equally. And that worked for a little while, but not as well as we would have liked for it to work. Because you know the nature of work. If any of you are professional market gardeners or run any kind of business together, You know how hard it is to pay attention to the needs of children while you're focusing on business or ministry or some other kind of work. So what it really looked like is that we were working 100% of the time, each one of us, and we were maybe giving 20% of our attention to parenting. But because the children were right there with us in the garden all the time, it felt like, you know, we had them with us, but we were not being intentional with them. And we had a conversation a couple years ago, and we started to review this and really come under conviction. And, you know, I realized that question that is asked, that will be asked of us, where is thy flock, thy beautiful flock? You know, I didn't want to answer, oh, Lord, I had them with me in the garden, and I lost them in the garden too, because I wasn't paying attention to them. And so we made what was for us the very hard decision of choosing to have me back out of our business and spend 100% of my time intentionally parenting while Luke shouldered the business responsibility. We had to hire more help. Our profitability went way down, but we started to see the fruits in our children that we were wanting to see, which was a real blessing, worth the sacrifice. Now, I have to say that when you're called to pursue a new direction that requires new habits, it's hard. It's a challenge. It takes a time of transition. There's a reason why the saying is old habits die hard. It's not easy to suddenly segue from something you've been used to doing to something new. And I tried at first. I was like, okay, now I'm going to pay attention to the children in the garden instead of just having them in the garden with me. I tried that, but it didn't work for me. I have an all-or-nothing sort of a personality, and, you know, we would start in on a project together, and I'd be like, man, I've got to get this row weeded before lunchtime. Okay, come on, kids. Okay, actually, no. Go play with the tadpoles over there while I finish this bed, and then we'll do something else. And I just kept getting sucked right back in. So I actually, for me, had to leave the garden, which was my career place of career, and go somewhere completely different. So the kids and I went to the woods. Let me see, I have a few pictures here. What am I going to have to point out to make this work? Oh. Okay, you can just click on the second picture there. So we went out to the woods, and I'll tell you, I had to leave my phone behind. I told Luke, hey, this is where we're going to be. We're going to be gone for 2 hours. If you need me, you can come get me. Left the phone at home and just sat there. And for the first week or two, my brain was just buzzing with all the stuff I needed to do and all the things that were not getting accomplished because I was sitting here in this creek with these kids. I really could not even enter in to the experience. I would just literally sit there praying because that felt like something and just watch the kids play. But I realized that when we want our children to learn to value something good and wholesome and beautiful, we need to be present with them in that thing, fully present, all there. And so while I was praying, I was asking God to change my heart. I love the woods. I love nature. But I was too list-oriented. I had too many things on my mind, and I needed to be still and know that He is God. And so I just want to encourage you, if you're needing to build new habits in the way that you handle your children, persevere. It took maybe a month of me sitting in the woods every day before my mind completely slowed down, before the world began to open up around me, before I could really truly engage and enjoy and love being out there. So we spent that first springtime in the woods, and we have spent the last couple of springtimes in the woods, and it's been such a blessing. We love it. You can flip to the next slide. You know, we're out there. We find the first little baby snapping turtles and the tadpoles, and we find the ferns unfurling and the first red buds. I remember I lived in Oklahoma for 8 years, and every spring, my husband's family has a tradition of mushroom hunting. I could never find any mushrooms. I found one mushroom in 8 years of hunting and searching and praying, like, Lord, please help me to find mushrooms, you know. But when I was actually sitting out there in the woods, one day I was with my kids all around me, and I looked across the creek bank, and I suddenly just saw this mushroom. And then I saw other mushrooms. Right from where I was sitting, I saw a whole bunch of mushrooms, okay? I realized that before, my attitude in mushroom hunting had been, okay, I've got 30 minutes out here. Let me find some mushrooms. And this was the same attitude that I was using in being with my children in the garden. This is why it was not effective. You don't find mushrooms by covering a ton of space in a little time and scanning the ground lightly. You don't develop character in children or help them to love the garden by having a list to do and having a time frame to do it in and making sure you get it all done. So yes, we found a bunch of mushrooms out in the woods as we took time to be still and look, and our senses were sharpened. I really, really believe that this is a principle that is so necessary in our Christian life. I love the quote that says that when every other voice is hushed and in quietness we wait before him, the silence of the soul makes more distinct the voice of God. You can flip to the next slide, and if someone wants to repair this clicker, I would love for it to work for me. I'm trying the arrow. Okay, there we go. All right, I'll flip forward. This is a whole bunch of fish eggs, or frog eggs, tadpoles, yes, that we found in the woods, much to my children's delight. Okay. So, I just want to say for a moment that, you know, lists are important. I used to have a hard time when I would hear people giving the parenting advice, just sleep when the baby sleeps. You know, the dishes will be there when you wake up. Oh, yeah, they'll be there when you wake up. And you just missed your perfect opportunity to get them done, you know? Like, the laundry's always going to be there, but your kids are growing so fast. Well, I'd like my kids to be clothed while they're growing so fast, and I'd like to be clothed, too, in the meanwhile. So, like, I had a hard time with that whole idea. When do you get stuff done? You can't just not do it. You know, it's your job. You've got to get it done. But I've begun to learn that as we prioritize connecting with the hearts of our children, which is truly the most important thing, that as the Lord says, seek first the kingdom of God and all these other things he will add to us, he will help us to find ways to accomplish the things that are important, that we do need to do. As an example, just last week, we had two gorgeous, beautiful days in Oklahoma. It was 70 degrees and no wind. And like, I feel like in the wintertime when we get warm days, it's often accompanied with just a bunch of south wind, and it's not really fun to be outside because of the wind anyway. Well, these were still 70 degree days, and I was like, we've got to go outside. The kids were like, let's go outside. Let's spend the whole day outside. Let's do school outside. Let's eat outside. I'm like, okay. So we went outside. We did school. We sat in the middle of the garden, which right now looks like a nice green lawn because Luke has it planted with ryegrass. And we did school out there. We finished. We built a little campfire. We roasted sweet potatoes over it. We had a lunch outside. But, you know, the things that I normally do inside were building up. The laundry was building up. There were dishes that were building up. The next day came, and it was another gorgeous day. And the kids were like, let's go outside again, Mommy. That was so fun yesterday. And I was like, okay, tomorrow it's going to be 40 degrees. I can catch up then. But after 2 days of not doing your normal inside chores, you know what your house looks like? I mean, it gets very, very overwhelming. But I just really trusted that it was the right thing to do, to be outside, be present with my children. So then the 40-degree day comes, woke up in the morning, and I was like, okay, kids, we're going to do a lot of chores today. But still, it was so much. I mean, I have 5 children. Just living one day takes all your energy, not trying to catch up from 2 days of not doing indoor chores. But I tried to have a good attitude and got the kids doing school. Then I got a call from my mother-in-law, and she was like, the cousins are here. They really want to see your kids. Can we come over for a little bit? And I was like, I love having the cousins over, but this is like not the day that I need to be hosting cousins. So I told her, hey, let me see if I can motivate my kids to finish their school quickly, and if we do, then yes, you can bring them over. Of course, I told my children, and what could have taken an hour then took just 10 minutes because they really applied their minds, got their school done. I called my mother-in-law, and I was like, hey, you can bring them. So she came with them, and, you know, the cousins did artwork together on the table, did a little cooking project in the kitchen while my mother-in-law and I snapped through those four loads of laundry, folded them all, put them away while we were visiting. By the time she left an hour later, I was refreshed. I really enjoyed talking with her. The kids had a great time. Everything was done. We were fully caught up. I never could have done it by myself, but God saw that that opportunity would come. God knew already that if I prioritized my children, He would help me to accomplish all the other things that were important in my life. So, I'm going to move on to talking about character building in our children in the garden. You know, Luke and I like to try about once a year to sit down Sabbath afternoon and be really intentional about discussing where our family is headed, where we feel God is calling us in ministry, the kinds of character traits that we want to work on in our children, what we want to do with homeschool, all of these things. And then we'll check up on ourselves like in 6 months and see how we're doing, what we need to tweak. It's in conversations like that that you can decide, you know what, no, we can't take on that extra church responsibility right now. Or, hey, let's start cultivating this friendship with this family because this is a place where we want to move our ministry. Anyway, so Luke and I have written a list of character traits that are important to us to see developed in our children. And I'm going to share a few of those with you today in context of how we can use the garden to cultivate them. This is by no means an exhaustive list, nor has it been written in order of importance, but they're just character traits that are important to us. So the first one is we want our children to be well-grounded individuals. This might seem a little bit ethereal to you, but it's important to us. You know, when you look at the Genesis story, God created man and woman, and he created them into a garden. He did not create them into a garden. He brought them into a garden. He gave them work to do, which was working with the soil, with the plants, with the animals. He gave them dominion over that. They had a purpose right from the beginning. They had a meaningful work to do. And they were connected to the land. They were connected to their work in a very practical way. And in doing that work, they brought glory to God and fulfilled the purpose for their existence. There are so many young people today who do not have a sense of purpose, who do not know what they're about, what they're supposed to do, who are just like, you know, ships without a rudder. And we really want our children to have that sense of purpose. Why I'm here, what I'm supposed to do, what's my meaning in life, where do I fit into this picture? And we've found the garden is a wonderful place to start building that sense of purpose. Our children have the privilege of living on a multi-generational family farm, which is not the place where everyone can live. But however God has written your story, it is unique to your family and it is precious. And you can connect your children to your story in a way that they can feel like, wow, I'm part of this picture. I'm important. I have a work to do in my family. So, you know, on our farm, every place that we go, there's memories connected to generations ago. Luke's great-great-grandfather moved to the farm in 1905. They actually came to the farm because they were experiencing some religious persecution from their family on the family farm that they had been on previously when they embraced the Sabbath and they stopped eating pork and other such things. The lifestyle changes did not go over well with their extended family, so they uprooted, came to Oklahoma, and settled on this family farm. And you know, when I tell my kids, we're in the garden, we're pulling weeds, and I'm telling them stories about their great-great-great-grandpa and their great-great-grandpa and their great-grandpa and their grandpa and their father, and then next, it's them. And I'll tell you, their eyes are wide with the wonder of, wow, this is huge, and this is how I fit in, and this is my place. And like, I'm connected to this place, I'm connected to this land, I'm connected to this story. It's really powerful, the sense of grounding that that gives to a child and the direction that it gives them, even when they're very little, to help them to understand what they are supposed to do, where they fit in, and how valuable they are. And so this is something we've sought to instill in our children. And like I said, you might not live on a family farm where your family has been over 100 years, but God has brought you to wherever you are for a purpose, and you can help your children understand how they fit into that picture. It really will make a difference in their lives. The next character trait I want to talk about is resilience. You know, can you flip my picture since I can't seem to get this to work on command? It should go back one. Oh, never mind. You're right. I'm skipping over stuff. Okay, so this is just an example of outdoor time that we had taken when we were transitioning to the children and I just really spending a lot of intentional time outside together. We did all kinds of things. Sometimes, because when Luke was home, I was able to leave the little ones with him and go on longer adventures in the woods with the kids. Here you can see us. We are exploring a lake that's on the edge of our farm with a little sheep in the middle, little bottle lamb the kids were taking care of who followed us everywhere. It was really, really precious. Next picture. Picture after that. Here Maria is doing bees. This is just another practical way that we involve our children at a young age in the agrarian, the things that we're doing, giving them meaningful jobs, meaningful ways that they can actually contribute to our lifestyle and our work. And it really, really makes them feel important and connected and needed. You can go to the next picture. Oh, this was a little bottle baby that we took care of for a few weeks that our son was really attached to. Unfortunately, didn't survive, as is often the case with bottle calves. They are bottle calves for a reason and don't always have the greatest survival rate. But the whole experience was, even the fact that there's disappointment, there's death, things don't always turn out the way that we like, these are lessons that are excellent for our children to be learning early on. And the responsibility of taking care of animals is wonderful. I highly recommend it. You can flip forward. Okay, so resilience. You know how Paul talks in Philippians about how he has learned to be full, to be empty, to be, you know, to be hungry, to have a belly full of food, that he has learned to be able to be content in all kinds of situations. And this is something that is important, we feel, for us to teach our children. We want them to have resilience. And it's not just because we want them to be adults that can stand the disappointments of life, which is important. But, you know, we are living in very sobering times. There are hard times ahead that our children are going to have to live through. And developing resilience in them now, in the everyday, in the garden, is a wonderful way to prepare them for the challenges that face ahead. Sometimes when I talk to other mothers, you know, they're like, how do you go out to the garden? Like, there's so few days that are ideal. The weather is good and the children are behaving and all the things are done and you actually have time to go out there and have a nice time. I'm like, well, yeah, if you go about it that way, you sure aren't going to end up in the garden very often. But if you make a commitment and you say, hey, wet or dry, cold or heat, we're going to be out there. Not only will you actually get it done, but you will teach your children some important lessons about real life. Life is not always ideal. There are many times when we're going to be uncomfortable, but we can still do it. I have to say, though, that there are things that we have done to mitigate the discomforts, and that is that, have you heard the phrase, there's no such thing as bad weather, there's just you're poorly dressed? No such thing as poor weather, it's just poor dressing or something like this. I really believe it's true, okay? So on rainy days, we got our kids these rain suits. I highly recommend them. They're on the expensive side, but it's definitely a worthwhile expense. You can talk to me about them afterwards. But, you know, we just dress them up. We go out in the rain. And I get myself dressed up and go out in the rain. And we have a great time out there. The children love it. Actually, it's not our children who don't want to go out under unideal conditions. It's mama who doesn't want to go out under unideal conditions, especially of a baby. It's just, it is more challenging. It's harder. But if you choose to go out anyway, you will reap the benefits of it. Your children will appreciate it, and you'll learn to love it too. Okay, here we go. So here's a day that we were out harvesting radishes, and you can't tell from the picture, but it was drizzling. It was super yucky out there. I didn't want to be out there, but I got in my I'd shed my rain jacket by this point, but there's my baby. You know, This picture was taken kind of early on. He was covered with mud from head to toe by the time it was done. But we had a wonderful time out there, and we spent our time out in the garden. And our children are learning, when you're a little bit uncomfortable, if you have a good attitude and mama's having a good time, we can have a good time too. Attitude is very important. I've learned that the hard way in life. Mama's attitude makes the biggest difference in the world with how our children's attitude will be. Also, meeting disappointments with courage. This is another area in which we are an example for our children. This fall, we're on a sabbatical year, so we were not going to even plant a fall garden, but I told Luke, I really want one tunnel of greens so that I can have as many greens as I want through the winter. We can even sell the extras or whatever. So we went through the trouble of planting a whole tunnel of lettuce mix and spinach and kale. Some things did better than others, but the lettuce was gorgeous, and I was letting it grow because I wanted to get mature enough that I could then just start harvesting throughout the winter. And it got big enough, and Luke started telling me, hey, it's time, you know, you can go out there and start picking lettuce. And I was like, okay, I'm doing it tomorrow. That night, before I truly was going to go out there and pick my lettuce, our old horse got into the caterpillar tunnel and ate the entire winter supply of greens in one night. I cannot describe to you how disappointed I was. Not only was that hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of greens, in my mind anyway, but like it was a lot of work. It was something I'd been looking forward to. I had a lot of plans for those greens, and it was not to feed an old horse. And I'm thankful that my children were not actually around when I made the discovery because I didn't handle it very well in the moment. I called up my husband, and he really helped me to work through it. But by the time I got to my children, you know, I sought to meet that disappointment with courage. Because when you're out in the garden, when you're living this lifestyle out in the country, you will meet disappointments all the time. And if you meet them with courage, your children will learn that when there's disappointments and challenges in life, we don't fall apart, we don't lose it, we don't get upset at each other, we meet them with courage and we move on. Flexibility, oh no, first let me talk about diligence and work ethic. Start them young. This is a really wonderful, it's a really wonderful opportunity you have to get your babies out there in the garden. They're not going to be very helpful for quite a while. It's true. You just accept that. You can set the bar low for what you expect to do. But you can have high expectations for them, too. Children can do more than we realize. So here we are doing the strawberry tipping project. I think this was a couple years ago, actually. And the baby was filling the seed trays with a little bit of help from Daddy. And then the toddler was helping to tip the strawberries. She was very, very careful. She did a pretty good job. We had to go after her and make sure that everything was as it needed to be, but I was impressed by how well she did. So get them involved in meaningful tasks, not just, you know, children can tell the difference. They can tell the difference when you give them a job that doesn't really need to be done and doesn't really matter to you, but you're just giving them some busy work to do. They can tell the difference between that and a job that you are actually depending on them. It's actually important, and the way that they do it makes a difference. Our oldest in particular has no burden to do a job that he knows he's really not needed for, but if he needs to play a role that nobody else can play and like we are depending on him, it makes a huge difference to his attitude, his perseverance, and his willingness to be inconvenienced to enter into some work. I remember Luke was digging holes with a tractor and an auger, and it was a two-person job. I am not tractor savvy, but I was expecting to have to run the tractor while he was directing the hole digging, but he was like, you know, no, I'm going to teach Hudson how to do it. It's like, Hudson is way too young to be dealing with the tractor, no way. But Luke was like, no, he can do it. Of course, probably that means I could do it too, but yes, Hudson was actually able to do it, and he recognized this is a job that not even mommy knows how to do. Daddy really, really needs me to do it. You know, he worked on it for hours with Luke, and our oldest does not have the longest attention span for jobs like this, but he really felt needed. Of course, what boy doesn't like to work on a tractor? But my point is that it was an important job, and he felt really important working with his daddy to get it done. when our kids are young, like toddler age up to 3-4 years old, our tactic out in the garden is to just let them try a lot of different things. Whatever you happen to be working on may seem really interesting to them. They want to come, oh, mommy, let me try. Let me try using that new hoe. It's not going to be helpful to have them use that new hoe, but go ahead and let them try. And you know what? They're probably going to try for maybe 3 minutes, and then they'll move on, and you can go back to using your hoe. But encourage them. Every effort that they make to be helpful, encourage them and let them try a whole bunch of stuff. We don't try to keep them on mundane tasks for a long period of time when they're very young. They're still in like exploration mode. But as they start to get a little bit older, then we start to encourage them to stick with something, to stick with a job for a given time frame. And we try to make it reasonable. But now, you know, Hudson and Rhea are 7 and 8, and we expect more of them, and we expect them to persevere. And their ability to stay with a job has increased greatly over the last few years. And, you know, they have actually become excellent transplanters. Kids are very nimble and quick, and if they learn how to do it well, they're really meaningful parts of the team. I'll tell you, like, they can transplant as well as any worker that we hire, and they know it. Like, they know that we really value them for that job, and so they love to come out and do it with us. They also really appreciate having a reward at the end. You know, even the smallest rewards mean so much to kids. I remember we were out here this evening planting peppers, and it was a family effort. Well, mostly the little one off digging earthworms was helping us by keeping herself busy, but you know, the baby was stacking the pots, Hudson and Maria were burying the plants, Luke was setting them out, and we had a few lines to do, and it seemed like a big job, but we told the kids, hey, if we work on this fast, if we work as a family team, we're going to get it done, and we'll all be able to go swimming together, including Daddy. Oh, you should have seen how fast they worked, and we did get it done really quickly, and every time they practice those muscles of diligence, they strengthen. And they're turning into little hardworking kids by God's grace. We have jobs in our family. Our kids are funny. When we tell them we're going to do such and such a job, okay, is this a paid job or is this a like being part of the family firm job? They know that there's the two different categories in their minds, and we've told them, hey, we don't want you only to do jobs because you're going to be paid. Oh, no, we're just asking, we're just curious. So we have jobs that we expect them to do because they're part of the family team, and we all work together, and we don't all get paid for it all the time. And then we have paid jobs that we have them do, and that's always so exciting. They really, really enjoy collecting their quarters and nickels and dimes at the end. We try to pay them in change because they always think they're getting more money if they get a whole bunch of pennies rather than a few dollar bills. But family togetherness is such a beautiful thing. I remember when I was a kid, working in the garden did not qualify in my mind as recreation in any way, shape, or form. And I mean, I enjoyed gardening, but I thought it was work, like it was family work time. Then I got married to Luke, and he had a very different perspective in life. Like, he was like, hoeing is so, that is family recreation. That's what we do in our family for recreation in the evening at the end of the long day. It's so relaxing to get out a hoe and go out to the sweet corn field. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, hoeing for recreation. But as I entered into it, I realized that these things, as we're doing them together and we're having fun, they can be recreation. And in Luke's family, you know, several families live on the same farm, and so we'll come together in the evenings and have these hoeing parties in May, June, as the sun is setting, end of the day. We're just all relaxed out there talking, having a great time. My kids now, way before it's time to start hoeing in the spring, they'll be like, when are we going to hoe? When are we going to have hoeing parties? When are we going to get to start hoeing with our cousins? You know, they love it. And it all has to do with the attitude and the way that you present something. You can make work seem like a drudgery, a consequence, you know, something that we only do because we have to. Or you can make it seem like something that is enjoyable, pleasurable, fun, something we do together as a family because we love each other, because we're part of the same team. So now I want to talk about flexibility. You know, this is something that I've really had to grow in. Like I said, I'm pretty type A, list-oriented, got to get it done, and flexibility is not my forte. But as a parent, flexibility is something that's very important. And as a gardener and as a parent in a garden with children in particular, flexibility is something that is quite critical to having a good time out there. And so I have been learning to be more flexible, to change plans and still have a good attitude. I remember we went out earlier this year and we were going to do a particular project in the garden. I don't remember what it was, but I was looking forward to it. And we're walking by the patch of cucumbers, and suddenly my oldest son noticed that they were experiencing a blister beetle takeover. And if you've lived in the South and you've seen blister beetles, you know how fast they can just wipe out something very quickly. And so we had to change our plans. Luke was not actually on the farm at the moment. I think he was working a nursing shift. So we called him, and he was like, hey, go get the organic spray and mix it up like this. And anyway, so our project for the day totally changed so we could save these cucumber plants. But my choice to have a good attitude about the fact that I had to put off whatever it is that I wanted to do and was looking forward to till later, and with a good attitude shift towards what we needed to do, totally colored the way that my children saw the experience. And they enjoyed the new job. Children, of course, are flexible by nature. And it's only we as parents who make the situation into a drudgery rather than a joy by our attitude. Also, practically speaking, I've been able to do a lot with my children outside because my children have learned to be very flexible about like nap times and the other things that structure children's days where you feel like, well, you need to be close to the house so that you can do this at X, Y, or Z time. We've been able to do out in the garden. And yeah, my little ones have all learned to nap in the backpack or in the stroller on the edge of the garden while the rest of us can be engaged in other things. Oh, here's another napping child in the garden. This is almost a little bit scary because she put herself down for a nap. And you can see the kind of cover crop she was in. We couldn't even find her. But we stumbled across her, thankfully, before we left the garden. So, initiative and responsibility is another thing that we've been seeking to cultivate in our kids. And one of the best ways that we've found to encourage that is allowing our kids to have their own gardens. Luke built these planter boxes. I'm not sure exactly how big they are, maybe 6 by 12 or something like that. And 4 by 12. And the kids each have one. This is Hudson's planter box here. And he was able to grow several different crops of things in it over the last couple of years. So they're working together here and planting his, I think he'd already had a crop of something in it earlier in the spring, and now they're replanting into, not sure what that is, squash. But, you know, our kids, we really truly give them domain over their planting boxes. We give them suggestions. They'll come to us and ask us. You know, Hudson is really interested in earning money, so he'll be like, what should I plant so that I can get the most money out of this space or whatever? So Luke will give him some advice on what to plant. Maria's really into flowers, and she fills up her planter box with flowers. She actually makes more money off of her flowers than Hudson ever makes off of his veggies. But they take a lot of initiative and responsibility when they feel like this is their thing. This is their space. They can do with it what they want. They can plant whatever they want, and they're also expected to take care of it. They can ask us for assistance when they're getting a little bit overwhelmed, and we're happy to help them, but ultimately, the responsibility falls on their shoulders. Luke will also give them beds in the garden that are theirs to take care of, particularly like this last year, about a year ago right now, we were reading the My Bible First Little Lad, Barley Loaves and Fishes story. I remember as a girl, I used to read that story, and I'd be like, oh, those barley loaves look so good. Well, sure enough, my kids are like, Mommy, why don't you ever make barley loaves? They look so, so yummy. I'm like, well, for one, I don't stock barley around here. So yeah, remind me next time I order from Country Life, I'll get barley and we'll try making barley loaves. Well, Luke was overhearing, he was like, hey, why don't you just grow barley? Grow barley this year, and then we can make barley loaves. The kids just jumped fully into the project, very excited. Luke gave Hudson a 3x100-foot bed, and he grew a crop of barley in it. And he was very excited about it, hand-harvested it, shook all the barley out, and stuck it in the freezer where it still resides. I need to grind it up and make barley loaves out of it. But there was so much character building along the way that happened in the vision of growing barley for these barley loaves. So encourage your kids and give them responsibility. Give them a meaningful part of your garden and your life. Now, when the seed catalogs come in the winter, our kids are just as excited about them as we are. Luke and I tried to sit down at the beginning of the year to make our seed order, and we couldn't even get it done until we had ordered the seeds for our children. They were like, it's our turn, help us, we need to order for our, don't order your seeds before you order ours. Anyway, they had a great time, and they decided what they were going to grow, and the seeds came, and they've been out there cultivating their soil, even though it's going to be a long time before they can plant anything. They're very, very excited about the new season. So they're able to take initiative themselves when they feel ownership. Oh, let me go the other way. Here they are. Luke has taught them how to soil block. I dislike soil blocking. I don't know exactly why, but I don't enjoy it at all. And I'm not good at it because I never do it. Our kids have gotten better than me at soil blocking, and they're pretty proud of that, actually, which is fine with me. But here they are. They made all these soil blocks for themselves, and Luke gave them some spinach seed. It's nice to give them something that's kind of in abundance, that it doesn't matter if they get one or five seeds in a hole. You know, some things matter more than others. Some seeds are more expensive than others. But he gave them spinach seed and let them start their trays, including the little, I think he was one there with his tongue hanging out in concentration, starting his little spinach seeds. Here they are harvesting broccoli. I don't actually remember if this was from their garden or from our garden, but they were highly engaged in the process and really enjoyed it. Here Hudson is teaching little Luke how to harvest salad turnips. And this is another example. You know, I really didn't expect the little one to be able to do this in any way, shape, or form. I didn't take the time to try to teach him. But his older brother decided to do so, and he did a good job. So one thing that I've learned is that our children really, we should set our expectations high for our kids, and they really try to come up to them. In fact, in many ways, our children will not try to come higher than the expectations that we set for them. So set them high and be alongside them, encouraging them in the journey, and you'll be surprised by what they can do. One benefit that has come from letting our kids grow their own gardens is that their love of vegetables is just tremendous. It's amazing to me. I mean, here's little Luke eating raw okra. Who likes raw okra? I mean, is it a food? There's a few people who do. I didn't even grow up in the South eating okra, so like, I can't wrap my mind around it. I do like cooked okra now. But my kids love raw okra. And they go out there, you can see he has several he's trying to eat all at the same time. This is a large kohlrabi that Linnea is in the process of eating, and she actually got most of it eaten, surprisingly. It was like, you can't quite tell from the picture, but it's nearly as big as her head. It was really large. But our kids love these odd veggies, and part of the reason is early exposure, and part of the reason is because they grew them themselves. You know, when you grow something yourself and you have ownership over it, you're bound and determined to like it no matter what it tastes like. And so it's been great because our children are very willing to eat just about any vegetable out there, especially if they grew it. Little Luke loves green drink. You know, I know a lot of kids and adults who can't do green drink, but My kids very easily do green drink, particularly if we harvested the greens from their own garden. Another real plus for me has been that our kids have learned they're very creative cooks. We started early on. My sister-in-law made them one of these, you know, mud kitchen things. And this was kind of in our days when I was more full-time in the garden and trying to find things that they could do on their own, just on the sidelines. So we gave them full access to the compost pile. And we have a lot of good produce in our compost pile. It's not just rotten stuff. We just produce a lot. And so we eventually have to clean out the cooler, even if there's stuff that's still good. So we would give them real fruits and vegetables to work on in their mud kitchen. And they started to actually make some nice-looking things, at least nice-looking to them, things they were willing to eat for lunch. And eventually I was like, hey, you know what? I need to harvest this energy and this creativity and start having them cook actual meals for us. And they do it all the time now. Their favorite thing to do is soup or stir-fry that you can just kind of dump any kind of vegetable in. And you know, I give them some basic seasonings, and I let them have at it. We've given them training on how to use knives and how to use stoves and all of that. And they do a great job. And they know how to do it start to finish. They've been doing it for a long time, actually. It was end of the fall, I had to go out right around food preparation time. We have sheep, and they had gotten into the neighbor's barley field, and I had to go fix the fence. Luke was gone to work, and I told the kids, hey, you know, just keep doing what you're doing here. I'm going to take the baby on my back. I'm going to go fix the fence. Hopefully, I'll be back really soon, then we'll make lunch together. Well, I was gone for like an hour and a half out there. It's a much more involved project than I expected. I came back expecting the kids to be horribly hungry, but no, in fact, they were just in the middle of a big cooking project. They had decided to surprise me and make lunch while I was gone. We didn't have anything in our garden because, like I told you, the horse ate all the lettuce, and the only other thing that we had was these daikon radishes. So my kids dug up a bunch of daikon radishes, sliced them, and fried them, and had this huge tray of fried daikon radishes that we were going to eat for lunch. Has anyone ever tried fried radishes before? They're so good. They're really delicious. I was highly impressed. The kids were so pleased. And I was so pleased that the house hadn't burned down and the food tasted good. Also, they can really it's a kind of a positive peer pressure thing to like veggies when they're involved in this way. I'll tell a story on my sister's little boy. So he was visiting the cousins, and of course my kids, I decided to make soup for lunch. And the kids were like, oh, can we help you? No, can we make our own soup for lunch? I was like, okay, yeah, you can do that. So they raided we have a lot of long-term veggies in storage in our cooler, raided the cooler and the fridge and chopped up all of these things. I mean, radishes and eggplant and just a lot of stuff. And I was thinking, they're not going to like how it tastes. And little cousin Ethan is especially not going to like how it tastes because he's certainly not used to this kind of cooking. But I just let them do it. Ethan was in the thick of it. And when the soup was done, we served up the kids and we were like, do you want mommy's soup or your soup? Oh, we want our soup. And Ethan wanted the kids' soup too. He ate down that bowl of soup. It was really impressive. And here we adults are eating the adult soup. And Luke was like, well, let's taste the kids' soup. It was far superior to the soup that I had made. It was so good. We finished up the kids' soup. It was really, really good. So you can encourage your children and their creativity, allow them to use it in meaningful ways, and you will reap the benefits of it in more ways than one. We've also sought to teach kindness and generosity to our kids in the context of the garden. You know, our kids, yes, they sell some of their produce or their flowers, but they also love to give them away. This was an Armenian cucumber that Hudson picked. He was very proud of it. We took it to church and made this huge platter of Armenian cucumber salad slices. And he was so pleased to share. He loves, just you can see the smile on his face when he takes things that he grew himself and shares them with others. And Maria loves to share her flowers. And who doesn't love a bouquet of flowers, you know? She finds great joy in, she really probably wouldn't sell anything if we didn't sell them at market. She would just give it all away. And I love to see these seeds of, these plants of kindness and generosity growing up in our children with something that means something to them because they have been so involved in it. It's one thing to walk into church and be like, oh, here's a dollar for you to give at Sabbath school, or, you know, let's go feed the homeless with this food that somebody else provided. And it's another thing for them to take the fruit of their own hands and generously share it with others. This is a a picture from this fall. We were doing our last pepper harvest, and the baby was tired of being on his mat or his stroller or wherever I had him, and Sister Maria took him over and just held him and rocked him and put him to sleep right there in the middle of the garden while the rest of us harvested the peppers before the frost. But I'm going to wind down here, and I just want to share a couple of verses that have been a real encouragement to me as a mother. One of them is Isaiah 40:11 that says, he shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs in his arms and carry them in his bosom and shall gently lead those who are with young. And I've been so blessed by that because, you know, parenting is much more difficult than I expected. I sat through so many parenting seminars as a teenager and young person that I thought I was going to know how to parent and my kids were going to be the perfect kids. I had no clue just how much energy and sacrifice and dedication it takes. It's not even that we have no clue what to do sometimes. It's just that we don't always have, we feel like we don't have the energy to actually do it consistently every single time. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's where it's really hard. And that's where sometimes I really fail as a parent. And the thought that God sees me, he sees my little flock of young children, and he is gently leading me and giving me the grace and giving me the strength to be the parent that he is calling me to be is such an encouragement to my heart. I also love the verse in Isaiah 54:13 that says that all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. And this is another promise that, you know, we will do our best. We will pour ourselves into it. We will make mistakes along the way. We will not always be the example that we need to be to our children. And yet, God is promising us that as we seek first his kingdom, as we seek to prioritize the things that are most important, he will bless our efforts, and great will be the peace of our children. I have a couple of minutes left. If anyone has any questions or any comments or a little anecdote to share of ways that you have found helpful for using the garden as a place to cultivate character in your children. Okay, so the question is, how do I fit in homeschooling with gardening? I have really just started my full homeschool career this year. I am doing about 1.5 hours a day of actual, like, sit-down homeschool-type work. And on a good day, I will just take that right out to the garden and we'll sit in the grass and do it out there so that while I'm engaging with the older kids, the younger ones are running around me and enjoying the benefits of outdoor time. It doesn't take that long to homeschool if you are... I mean, I homeschooled, and it never took me more than 2 or 3 hours a day at most to get my bookwork done, which leaves a lot of time for other things. And there are many homeschool subjects like science that can completely happen outside with very minimal having to sit down with a pencil and paper. So I do my, I usually, you know, do breakfast. The kids go outdoors and do their animal chores while I'm cleaning up and getting ready for homeschool. We do our homeschool, and then we're outside pretty much for the rest of the day, besides the time we spend in doing music. Any other question or comment? Go ahead. Did we do the dishes or the chores in one day, like that day that I left the dishes? We did. And you know, because my children were looking forward to being with their cousins that day, this is a good point. Just be creative and use the reward system. It's very motivating for children. We got that extra work done so fast. So yes, For those of you who don't know the background of our story, we actually lived in a canvas tent for 2 years when we came back from serving overseas full-time 4 years ago. So we were in the tent for 2 years, and during that time, we built a kitchenette in our seed-starting greenhouse and basically lived in the greenhouse until we moved into our unfinished but much more finished than a greenhouse building project. Okay, music time. Yeah, so when my littles were really little, before we wanted to start dedicating time and money to like music lessons, I would sit down with them every day and start teaching them how to sing, how to carry a tune, have them just repeat after me, do like voice exercises with them. They just get a real kick out of voice exercises, so it's really fun for them. And then we would learn scripture songs and hymns. So it was mostly focused on singing at first and really training their ear. And then when they've turned about, it depends on the child, but about 5 years old, then we've helped them or allowed them to pick what instrument they want to dedicate time to, get them lessons, and then practice with them every day. I am officially out of time, so I'm going to have a word of prayer here, and if you have any other questions for me, you're welcome to come up afterwards. Heavenly Father, I thank you for your goodness, for your mercy, and for gently leading us along, giving us the wisdom, the strength, the grace, and the stamina in this demanding but beautiful stage of life, this journey called parenthood. I pray that you will help us to be faithful to the high calling that you've given us, that you will give us wisdom as we teach our children to love good and beautiful things, spending time in the garden and the forest and the home. Help them to become diligent, kind, loving, upright young people who love and serve you. In your name I pray, amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.